Welcome to the Ames Heartbeat Podcast, a monthly brief interview with social services, civic, education, and business leaders about life in Ames and Story County. This podcast is produced and presented by the Serve Ministries of Christ Community Church, committed to the pursuit of common good while sharing the uncommon news of the gospel in and from Central Iowa, right here where God has placed us, because loving Ames means knowing Ames.
Hello and welcome. I'm Wayne Stewart, Serve Pastor at Christ Community Church in Ames, Iowa, and your podcast host. Our guest today is Brandy Young, Executive Director of Wings of Refuge, providing opportunities for healing and restoration to survivors of sex trafficking and sexual exploitation through a long-term, restorative safe home, meaningful work through a social enterprise, and transitional housing. Brandy has followed a path in and out of the corporate world, local ministries, and overseas missions, serving in urban youth ministry, international agricultural development, and the local church. She's a co-founder of Field of Hope, a Christian nonprofit dedicated to agricultural education and extension in Uganda, and a lifetime learner, recently completing her master's in arts in Christian leadership and a certificate in spiritual direction through Sioux Falls Seminary.
Brandy, thanks so much for being here on the podcast today and looking forward to this conversation. We're asking four basic questions of everyone there. So let's start with the first one. Where do you think things are going well in our community?
Yeah, and thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here. So just for context, so I'm the executive director of Wings of Refuge that provides safe housing to survivors of sex trafficking. And so a lot of times when I consider our community, that's kind of the lens I'm looking through, specific to Ames. And I would say things that are going well are the community's ability to rally around need. So specifically, you know, Wings moved to the area in 2019. And I would say what we have experienced is a community that is willing to kind of come around when they see a need that is met and just collaborate or offer up their area of expertise. Like specific to sex trafficking, it's such a complex issue that not one person or organization can solve it on their own. Right. And I have been so encouraged as we've been out, whether that's churches, businesses, or just people in the community that are willing to collaborate and kind of take that competition down and say, we're in this together.
Yeah. That's amazing. Sometimes we think of a town like Ames as a little idyllic, maybe. You know, it's a university town, so there's a high level of education across sort of the demographic of our town and our communities. Seems like things are reasonably economically stable, even when things hit the country hard in different ways. Have you found it all? It doesn't sound like it, but have you found it all that in a community like that, there's a bit of a shock value? Mm-hmm. That there's a reality that we don't see on the surface. It's present. It's real. How does that shake up our kind of idyllic Midwest community worldview?
Yeah. And I think that's true of Ames and also Iowa. Like, for example, you take an issue like sex trafficking and people's first question is, yeah, I know that happens over there, right, but does it really happen here? And so what I would say, what I run into, even when people are asking that question, they almost know that it's happening, even if it's not right in front of them. And so they kind of come up with a little trepidation, but also that genuine concern of, are you really telling me it's here? And if it is, what can I be out on the lookout for? How can I engage in this? And so I would say they know they might not be living in the reality where they're interacting with it, but people have started hearing, learning, whatnot to know it's more prevalent than what I think. And tell me how I can kind of peel the cover back a little and see what I'm not seeing in my daily life.
Yeah, well, and that's so encouraging to hear that our community once seeing or hearing about something that is a bit shocking to them, they wouldn't have imagined otherwise being present, that they actually say, I'd love to be able to do something about this. Because you could have the opposite reaction, right? It could be like, I didn't think that was in our community, and frankly, I don't want to think about it. But you're saying largely it's been the opposite of that. That's really encouraging to hear.
Yeah, it really has. You know, I was thinking, there was a song I heard a while back that was called, the singer was singing about Not in My Backyard, and it's, hey, I know this stuff, these evils or whatnot are happening in the world, but not in my backyard. And so I feel like that's kind of how I've seen people in this community respond of, you're right, like no one wants to think that it's happening right here, but there's also, then how do we be different in our neighborhood? How can it be, you know, not in my backyard? How can we rally around these vulnerabilities and, you know, like be a part of the solution? And so, yeah, I really have seen an opening to learning, humility, and growth as people press into the issue.
So the not in my backyard is not the, I don't want to know about it. I want to put my head in the grass in my backyard. It is the, this is not going to happen in my backyard.
Exactly.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's a cool rally and cry. I like that a lot. Good. So the second question then is just the opposite and might be tied in some ways to this. What are some challenges that you see across our county and community?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I would say, again, as I consider not only the issue of sex trafficking, but I would say there is a gap in what I would call, as I look through the lens of sex trafficking, it's a gap in emergency shelter or emergency care. So when people, and that can go beyond the issue of sex trafficking, but I would say, when people, for example, first come out of the life, we are a long-term shelter when they're ready to kind of make that commitment to restoration, but that's not that emergency shelter when they first come out. And I would say what we see, and again, it's not just limited to trafficking survivors, but enough beds or places for people to go in that short term. You know, it's not that the resources aren't here, but maybe they're full. And so just the opportunity to expand, or in our case, they're not necessarily dedicated to survivors of sex trafficking, where some of the traditional places might be a bit triggering for someone coming out of that life. And so I would say that's not just our community, but even wider as a state, like the state of Iowa doesn't have enough, you know, beds in that space. You know, there's lots of hurdles that have to be overcome to be able to escape the life, if you will. You know, sometimes the only picture we have are the physical things that might keep them. But I would say oftentimes it's more psychological or manipulation control, many factors that would keep someone in the situation. But let's say they are able to kind of take that step and get away from the traffickers, the abusers, you know, oftentimes that might look like showing up at an emergency room at a hospital. And so they have this, you know, brief moment where they are away from their situation. And I would say it's in those times, if someone helps them identify as like they're a victim of sex trafficking, maybe they call the hotline to get the National Human Trafficking Hotline to get resources. And oftentimes they are given long-term care facilities like us, but we are not, we don't provide that emergency, you know, we're staffed for that long-term commitment. And so really it's giving them a place to land so that they can get stabilized and then determine what the next right step is for them. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that's where that gap exists of, we will even get women that say, yes, I'm ready for a long-term commitment, but really all they need is 1 to 2 weeks of a place to land and determine what the next step is. And I would say that's where that gap exists. You know, once women are kind of stabilized and they're able to say, okay, I'm ready to commit to the recovery of, you know, my past, and they choose a long-term program, but it's that step ahead of that, giving them that safe place to land.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds a little bit like, some of the pieces that I heard when I went to a conference, last year or so, where a mental health expert was talking about a little bit of the gap in mental health in most of our communities, where the need is identified, but an actual referral is often 6, 9, 12 months down the road. And so there's no immediate care that can cover that interim period for them until they can actually get to a mental health professional. And this is things that would take you beyond basic counseling, right? Beyond individual or family and marital counseling, those kind of things. This presenter was talking about how those are fantastic services in our community, but essentially they're not well, set up to handle the more significant mental health needs. And so there's a gap there as well. So it sounds like maybe a bit of the same.
You're describing a very similar, and a little different area, but very similar need to what I would say is the gap that we're experiencing as well.
Yeah. Okay. So if there was one thing that you think the church might not know from your position of leadership, what would that be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the thing that is often laid on my heart, I'm going to do a two-part here answer.
A and B.
That's right. So A, I think I want people to know that, and the church especially, like trafficking looks different than just what we assume. You know, a lot of times we assume that it's because we've went and seen a movie and we think it looks always like kidnapping and your kids are at risk. And I would say it's much more the story that is much more common, not that kidnapping can't occur, but much more common across the U.S. is when traffickers take advantage of vulnerabilities, vulnerable people. And so that's why it's more prevalent, because sometimes what we think people have chosen as a life was actually done through control, manipulation, or someone exploiting vulnerabilities. Yeah. And I would say that's why we just continue to expand what we assume is trafficking. And the more that we understand how broad it is, we understand, I think just have more grace and compassion for people that what we might call in a sex worker in the industry, and actually understanding the story that got her in that place.
Sure. And it could put us in, sorry to interrupt, because you're going to give us the B in a second, I think. But that feels to me like then that calls us to a more proactive stance.
Yeah.
Right? Because if we see that there are contributing factors that allow for that state of vulnerability, and then frankly, the dark side of human nature that would take advantage of that, instead of just being in a reactive posture of trying to heal and grant hope for the future and care for people in the everyday, is there a way that we can take care of the things that we're presenting in the first place?
And you just got to my point B.
There you go.
The thing that I, you know, one of the questions I get obviously in my role is once people kind of start to broaden their definition of trafficking, they understand where it is, then they ask like, oh my gosh, how can I, you know, what can I do about trafficking? And one of the things that I say is, especially as a church body, like, meet the needs of the vulnerable in your community. And I know sometimes we have that disconnect between, yeah, but does that really, you know, like, because you feel like it's a few steps away, but that's how we prevent it. Yeah. If you meet some of the needs, like that is what a trafficker does. They come in and meet the needs of vulnerabilities. Well, shouldn't we as the body of Christ in the church be doing the same?
Absolutely.
And so that's where my kind of cry to the church is, that is one of the most tangible things you can do on the front end of this issue is look around, and there's vulnerabilities all around us, you know, and so start meeting some of those needs, which actually decreases the likelihood that those people would fall prey to traffickers or to other circumstances that would exploit their vulnerabilities.
Yeah, great. I love that. Hit it upstream, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so let's go to the last question, which is often very fun to hear from people, what they think is an area that could be kind of contentious at times, depending on where you may find yourself in thinking about what an appropriate solution might be, policies. It gets very political at times, but there are so many ways, I'm convinced, that people of goodwill in a community but differing perspectives could come together and actually achieve more than they ever imagined, respectfully, right? And still maybe holding different opinions at the edges. What would be one thing that you think that or one way that you think people could come together in that way and be surprised by that collaboration?
Yeah, when I think about this question, we have often just sat in awe a little bit when you are working in the anti-trafficking space. We've often said that in general, everybody sitting around a table, no matter what their kind of bend is or belief is, the common in that is we all agree it's evil.
Yeah.
And so by very nature, like you don't really have to have a theological debate and or even share the same belief system to say we can do something about this evil. And so I would say just the very nature and issue of sex trafficking can be very unifying in just the, we will not stand for that type of evil in our community or in our church, despite what our belief system is. So yeah, in general, I would say that. And then it's, you know, for us, it's being able to be part of God's work of restoration, getting to bring, you know, share the truth of God's created design or intention. And I think that is another area like we can rally around, like despite we might have different opinions and theological stances, but getting to offer like what life has offered you has distorted from what God intended, you know, in your design and purpose. And so, I think just around that, God's intended purpose and kind of offering that restoration piece to people.
Yeah, it's amazing how powerful that is. So when the human soul has been sort of snuffed out to a certain degree, it can be relit and helping people understand, we kind of say it around here, that everything that they've experienced so far is not everything that there is. And if you can help them turn the corner to just think that a little bit, then it grows a little bit more and a little bit more. So the resiliency of the human soul, I think, is something that is very, very powerful. Thankful that you're doing the hard work, boots on the ground, and appreciate you very much coming in and helping us understand a little bit more of what's going on and how we might be able to engage. So thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. If people wanted to contact you, what would be some simple info to do that?
Yeah, probably the best way is just getting on our website. It's wingsofrefuge.net. And then, you know, got contact information beyond that. But yeah, that would be the best way to check us out, wingsofrefuge.net.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Ames Heartbeat Podcast. Check out more episodes at ccames.org/podcasts or on many of your favorite streaming services.